Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today is news editor Joel Stocksdale. Happy December. What's going on, man?
Hey, not too much. Just trying to stay warm.
It's 22 degrees. It is chilly around here. One of our editors, his refrigerator is out. So what he's doing is putting things on his back porch for a little bit. And it's keeping things quite cold for the moment. So hey, that's life, right? Got a great show for you today. Joel drove the Honda Civic Si. I know this is definitely a fan favorite, something a lot of people want to know a lot about. So we'll get into that. The Lincoln Corsair plug-in hybrid. I honestly didn't know this was a thing. So I'll be interested to hear what you think. Most of the Lincolns I've driven recently, I've been very impressed with the interior and exterior styling. So it's a red hot segment. We'll discuss that one. I drove the Subaru Ascent. This is essentially the Forester. A bit larger with a third row, and I drove the Onyx trim, which gives it a couple of nice different design flourishes, kind of spruces it up a little bit if that's what you'd like. We will spend some money, so let's get right into it. Honda Civic Si. I know you've had Honda Civics over the years. You drove this car a couple weeks back, right around the Los Angeles Auto Show. So you got to drive it in sunny California. Was it sunny? What did you think of the car?
Yeah, so we were driving it in the canyon roads north of Malibu. And on the whole, it's a really good car. And I mean, it had a good place to start from. The last Civic Si was a lot of fun too. But this one it's better in a number of ways. One of them is that the engine is better. It doesn't actually make any more power. Actually, peak horsepower is slightly down, but torque comes on a little bit sooner, and the peak power doesn't taper off quite as much. Some of that is probably due to the fact that they have reintroduced VTEC on the exhaust camshaft. So instead of just variable valve timing, it has variable valve timing and lift on the exhaust camshaft, kind of like old Civic SIs with VTEC. And you can actually hear it when you get up into the high rev band. It starts sounding a little angrier and louder, and it feels like it's holding the power a little bit longer. It's a more responsive engine. Some of that is partly due to the fact that they've added a lightweight flywheel. And I mean, the whole car, it's really a lot of fun. The chassis is light and tossable. It hardly leans in the corners. The steering it's really good. It's very accurate. So one of the things that I also really like about it is that it comes standard with a mechanical limited slip differential. And while you might necessarily think of that with a front drive car, it really makes a big difference. When you're powering out of corners, you don't get the inside wheels spinning away all your power. You get power to both wheels. It really grabs when you're powering out of a corner. So it's a whole lot more fun to drive with a limited slip differential. Actually, I came home and started shopping for limited slip diffs for my Turbo Beetle because I was like, oh, man, I forgot how nice this was. I used to have a 2007 Civic Si, which it was equipped the same way, but that was still when they were naturally aspirated. But this has been a kind of a standard feature on Civic Si's, and thankfully it still is. It's a really key feature. The shifter on the new Si is also improved over the last one. It gets upgrades from the Type R, and also comes with automatic rev matching for downshifts. If you want, you can turn it off if you don't like it. And if you do turn it off, the pedals are positioned so well that it's a breeze to rev match downshifts yourself. But the shifter itself is a little weightier. it feels a little bit more crisp and clear on where the gates are, but without being notchy. It's a really nice shifter. What else about the Civic Si? It's still mostly well equipped, but not quite as well equipped as it used to be. So it comes with automatic climate control, and it comes with a sunroof, and it comes with the Bose stereo system. You also get nicer seats with better bolstering and support. They're really good seats. I don't know what it is, but when Honda wants to make a good seat, they nail it. Super supportive, but still very comfortable. But what's missing this time around is you do not get heated seats, and you don't get dual zone climate control, which is a little bit disappointing, especially in the context of the fact that this year's Civic Si is more expensive than the old one. Now it starts at about $28,000, which is still a decent deal. It's still less than like GTI or GLI. And obviously it's still a really good car to drive, but it is more expensive than it used to be. And the gap has expanded. It used to be that it was like, I don't know, maybe $1,000 more for a Civic Si than like a Kia Forte GT or a Hyundai Elantra N-Line. But now it's kind of expanded to like $2,000 or $3,000. It's still worth it. Both of those, the Hyundai and the Kia, are still fun enough, but they're not quite as sharp and sporty as the Si. But the value proposition has diminished somewhat, especially also when you consider, like, if you're in that like sub $30,000 price range, you've also got options like the outgoing Subaru WRX, which has significantly more power and all-wheel drive. And you've also got the Subaru BRZ and Scion FRS, which both also provide more power. And those are rear-wheel drive coupes. But, like, for fuel economy, the Si is better. Should be better equipped than a base WRX. It's still a really good package, and it's still absolutely worth checking out if you're looking for kind of a sporty, affordable car. And I mean, power isn't everything, and even if it is, you can bet that the aftermarket is going to have loads of ways to add more power to your Civic Si, and it's a really good platform for adding power to it.
It's interesting because as a former Civic Si owner, you know, this is, I mean, you're the market for this thing, you know? I mean, you, like when they did some of these updates and improvements and some things they took away, if you will, like you're the guy they're looking at. So, I mean, would this still be on your list if you were out there, or would you be more looking for an older one or maybe some of those other cars you just mentioned?
I think it would still be on my list, because it is the handling, the shifter, the fact that you get hardware like the limited slip differential, it makes it a really good car as is, but also would be a really good car to build on. I mean, I like modifying cars. Like my Beetle, it has an engine tune on it, so it makes more power. My Miata is supercharged. And the Civic Si would be a great car to build on. Way back when I drove the previous generation Civic Si, when it was new, we also went down to Hondata down closer to downtown LA to drive one of their tuned Civic Sport hatchbacks, which added probably like 20 or 30 horsepower. and actually also added a flat foot shifting function, so that you can stay on the gas while you're clutching and shifting. Helps to keep the revs up, helps to keep the car from dropping out of boost. And that thing was a blast. And to be able to have that kind of power increase and like shifter tweaking while also having a beefed up transmission and differential, it would make for a really fantastic little car.
It's interesting. You say power isn't everything, and the Civic Si with 200 right on the nose, I think horsepower, that, you know, that's going to be a bit behind the BRZ, which is like 228, and then the WRX, which is, you know, looks like 260, 268. So, I mean, there's that, but I would agree with you. Power isn't everything in this segment. It wouldn't even be probably the second thing I'd be looking at. For me, it's all about how these cars feel, how they drive. I've always liked how the Civic Si drives. I think it's a really nice sort of like medium spicy sort of flavor. You know, you get a lot of it, but it's not going to like kind of like totally blow you away. It's not going to break your hands trying to shift the thing. I'm really excited about the shift dynamics, because that's like literally one of the reasons why I would look at the Civic Si over some of the other ones. The WRX has always historically been, you know, a bit of a thing you got to really saddle up and drive, you know, and the interior isn't like some of the Subarus, which we'll get to in a minute here about the Ascent, though. Like the WRX and the BRZ have always been a little coarser, a little maybe a cut below Honda. Subaru's kind of closing that gap a little bit, but I would, without having sat in the Civic Si, I would still probably put it a bit above the outgoing WRX anyway. We know there's going to be a new one coming up soon. So this segment is going to continue to get interesting. You know, the steering, the chassis dynamics, that's what I'm looking for in this segment. I think all three are different. What I think is interesting too here, like BRZ or Toyota 86, it's a rear wheel drive, very traditional, like long hood, you know, traditional sports car. You know, it's like a modern day, almost like Lotus Elan or something, you know, or any other car like that. WRX again, that's a lot. To me, a Civic Si, if I were going to daily drive it, I think that this would be my pick, because, you know, again, it's still a pretty civilized Honda Civic at the end of the day. It would be how I'm projecting this one out, and it sounds like that's what you're saying. The other ones, I think, really creep into, you know, a little more aggressive territory, if you will. The BRZ is certainly one that I've always considered it would be an ideal, like, third car for me. You know, like, I would love to take it out on, like, a weekend drive. Whereas Civic Si, you know, you got to get to work, get in the car and go to work, right? You know, so any other takeaways? You got to drive the canyon roads by Malibu. I've done that once or twice. I think I did it in a Ford EcoSport back in the day, if you can imagine.
That is an ambitious location for the EcoSport first drive.
Well, it wasn't for like the first drive. It was like an LA trip, if I'm remembering this right, like Ford's LA Auto Show trip. And we were just driving. I think there were Mustangs there too. That was probably more like it. I don't think it was like you take the EcoSport and drive it all the way. I think it was like part of the launch, and there were probably a Focus or two there as well. But yeah, what else did you think? Any other takeaways? I missed the roads of California. It's been a couple of years now since I've been out there. Great place to drive.
Yeah, it was nice to get out there, especially just as things are getting snowy and salty and nasty here in Michigan. A couple other things I will note about the new Civic Si, they got rid of the electronically adjustable suspension. So now it's just one standard shock and spring rate. You can't change it, which I think is honestly fine. It rides still pretty well, and it handles really well. And in this case, now if you do ever feel the need to upgrade the suspension, you don't have to deal with getting warning lights and stuff about the adaptive suspension system not being not working. Also, it does sound better. It's got a better intake and exhaust note. And the artificial engine noise that comes in on the sport mode settings is not as fake sounding and not as intrusive as before. I'd still prefer it if they just didn't bother, especially because now it naturally sounds better than it used to. But that's improved as well. And overall, the car is a little bit on the noisy side. So just keep that in mind in the event that you happen to be looking for a car that you also want to be a commuter. If it's got a decent amount of kind of road and wind noise. So if that bothers you, you may want to look at something that's slightly more kind of quiet and sophisticated, maybe like the GLI or GTI.
I drove the GTI, and I think that's another one that naturally gets into that, almost like you have a ton of fun with it, but it's not a bad commuter car. I've always thought the Honda shifters, to get really granular here, are a little bit more engaging, maybe a little more challenging than the Volkswagen ones. So I'll be interested to see if that holds true. Mazda 3 is another one. Obviously it doesn't quite compete with that level of like sportiness, but it's a beautiful car, same size, if you will. Could be as sporty, I guess, as you want to drive it. So there's that. You do have some options out there right now as far as this segment. So I think that's kind of cool. But let's shift gears here. Anything else you want to throw in?
Actually, so if you do like the sound of the Civic Si, but you do want something slightly more refined, and you can wait just a little bit, the Acura Integra is coming, and that will basically be a Civic Si.
Yeah.
But nicer and as a hatchback.
Oh, that's going to be a tough one for me. Because the Integra, since I've been in press cars, the Integra hasn't been a thing. You know, I know road test editor Zach Palmer has one, but like I don't have an old one laying around, so I've never driven it. But for me, it's like the Civic Si was always that kind of enthusiast option in this price point and size. So it's going to be exciting. I think that the Integra is going to be on one of my probably top 10 at least list cars to drive in 2022. Super psyched about that one. I actually, to your point, Joel, when you just mentioned the Integra, I tend to buy into almost like the hype and the idea of cars. So, you know, they're going to call it an Integra. I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, I know there's been a little bit of debate, but I think most people are generally on board with the specs and the bona fides that we know about it so far. I guess I'm not a true Acura purist, so I come at it a little more just practically. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to be excited to compare those. And, you know, for me, I like to almost like pretend if I were going to buy one, which one would I go with? It's like, ooh, well, that's a tough call for me. You know, I like to live vicariously if I were going to buy one and really put myself in the like enthusiast consumer or just consumer sort of their shoes. So that'll be a tough call for me. Pretty excited about the Integra too.
Yeah, I think the Integra is going to be really good. I mean, based on driving the Civic Si, Civic Si drives awesome, even if it's not super powerful. Yeah. And you just make it a little bit more refined and add a hatchback. That sounds like a win-win to me.
Yeah, I don't see a problem there. And I do think, you know, they're going to do some things to differentiate them, which I think is going to be key there. You don't want to, you know, have these two like cars stepping on each other's toes like that. You know, especially when you're trying, it's still a pretty niche market too. So, all right. Lincoln Corsair plug-in hybrid. That's a hard fade. But let's jump over into that world. I think it's a very intriguing product. I think it's good for Lincoln to offer a plug-in hybrid in the Corsair. I think the Corsair is a beautiful little crossover. What kind of fuel economy did you get with this thing?
You know, I forget exactly offhand, but I can look up the EPA rating, very quickly. Yeah. Give me just a second.
I mean, another thing I'll say about the Corsair too is I like how Lincoln has gone back to the like actual names too. I think they have a Zephyr for a concept they showed for, I think an auto show in China earlier this year. Bring back the Zephyr, man. I think that could work. Sedan, maybe not so much, but Zephyr is a good name. They used it in the 30s and 40s. I think it's so old that the Continental, I think, might have been the name that replaced it, if I'm remembering my Lincoln trivia right. And they did use it for a couple of years in the early 2000s. But I like the Corsair name too. So
yeah, Corsair is a very good name. You know, and the EPA fuel economy for it is 33 miles per gallon combined when driving just on gasoline. Okay. And then on both, it has a 78 mile per gallon equivalency. And okay, that's not enough. Yeah, and it has 28 miles of all electric range.
That's nice. So that'll get you actually, like, you know, the old number they used to throw out was 30 miles of like EV range. So, you know, the average American drives perhaps 30 miles or less in a day. Get your commute in, go to work, come back, charge it, you're good. Maybe you get to charge it at work, even better. So, I mean, that's a lot of like what you need. It's very usable.
Yeah, for sure.
Is the Corsair's styling, you know, I mean, it's, this is more of like an entry level Lincoln, if you will. I mean, you think it's a good value?
I think for the most part, it's, I mean, the way, like the way it drives, let me look up the price real quick. Cause that definitely plays a factor in the whole value proposition, but on the whole, like it's based on the Ford Escape, and that comes with positives and negatives. One of the big positives is just that it's super spacious. The rear seat is really, really roomy. It even reclines a little bit, and the seats slide forward and backwards, so you can adjust it for how much cargo space versus people space you want. But it is super, super practical inside. The version that I had came with my probably straight up my favorite Lincoln interior color. It's called Beyond Blue, and I would describe it as kind of like a dark turquoise. It's really pretty, and fortunately, it does not have the Escape's interior. In even like the dashboard and stuff, the dashboard is given kind of that current Lincoln sort of mid-century modern look. It's very wide and low and sleek with a pretty healthy smattering of chrome throughout. It's definitely old school, but I kind of dig it.
That sounds pretty good.
And the hybrid system on it works quite nicely. I've definitely noticed that, like, you can drive it on all electric power pretty easily, and it doesn't feel hugely down on power. When you do get to kind of around 50 miles an hour or so, it does start feeling a little bit short on electric power. But you can drive it up to and holding highway speeds in full electric mode. So even if your commute includes highway driving, you can still take advantage of the plug-in hybrid's capability. And like when the engine does kick in, it's pretty smooth. It's got really good torque. Brakes have good blending. It's got good regen. And also, this is kind of a credit to the Escape's platform. It actually handles pretty decently. Ride could probably be improved a bit. It does have it. The body's not super controlled. It's a little bit got kind of that up and down sort of kind of land yacht kind of floatiness. I'd like something just a little bit more firm. But yeah, on the whole, it's a nice vehicle. And looking up the pricing, it is kind of pricey. It starts at a little over $50,000.
So to me, that's where you're going to run into some trouble because, like, you know, Bronco Sport, same segment, Mercedes GLB, the Ford Escape itself. Like, I love what Lincoln's doing with their interiors and their styling, but I mean, they're pretty aggressive on their prices. Like, they don't discount and try to pick up market share. They're like, they're very much like old money. We're Lincoln, you're going to pay for it. So, you know, there's that. And I get in this case, it's a hybrid, plug-in hybrid, in fact. So you're getting, there's some stuff you're getting here that make this a little more expensive, but 50 grand, that's not nothing.
No, it's not. It's quite something, in fact.
Yeah. I mean, a base one does come in around 36 though for an MSRP. Right. So, yeah. You know, if you don't need the hybrid, yeah.
Right. Regular Corsairs are a pretty good value. But yeah, just the plug-in hybrid is not cheap. And like, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I'm double checking myself as we speak. There are not really that many this size and price point, though.
No, that's, to me, that's dead on. When we were kind of scripting out the show here, I was like, wait, plug-in hybrid Corsair? Wait a minute. You know, it's like this thing that you kind of like forget exists. It's a little below the radar. And frankly, this is probably a story that Lincoln should be telling more. Like, they have a very nicely sized, beautiful, compact crossover that's a plug-in hybrid. Like, that's the kind of work you need to get that out, if you will. You know, if this were a similarly sized, you know, entry level crossover for Lincoln, that was a plug-in hybrid from like a new electric company, we'd be like, check this thing out. But now it's like, oh, it's a Lincoln. Oh yeah, okay, cool, they're doing that. So to me, this is actually a very interesting story for Lincoln and, you know, a little bit for the car industry.
Yeah, and so like looking it up, so the Audi Q5 is available as a plug-in hybrid, but it starts right around $55,000. Yep. So right there is a $5,000 increase. And, well, actually, I'd have to double check this a little bit more, but I'm not sure it comes as well equipped as the Lincoln.
I mean, that I would say is probably true too, just because Lincoln isn't like I said, they're pretty aggressive on price and they, you know, that's how they're playing their cards. And I think that's, you know, entirely reasonable. Lincoln itself, actually, you know, they have the Aviator is also a plug-in hybrid, which I drove a couple years ago. And that's, you know, I think it's kind of, it's a good move for Lincoln to be adding these, you know, to be offering this like electrification. I think it's something that is good for the brand. It could help them get younger. It could, you know, like I said, bring in some new consumers. And they're very like, they're everyday vehicles, you know, that like fit your lifestyle. And, you know, it's not a large segment. You know, we're coming up with the Q5 and not a lot else. So, I mean, I think that's a compelling proposition.
Yeah. And actually, like, I'm looking it up also, the Corsair plug-in hybrid is more efficient and has slightly better electric range than the Audi. And the same goes for the BMW X3 plug-in hybrid. So, yeah, it's not cheap, but I think it does have a genuine value proposition for this part of the market.
Cool. All right. So let's briefly hit on the Subaru Ascent Onix Edition. That's what I am currently driving. It's about $36,000-$37,000, so kind of a nice value. That's the starting price. Onix is basically an appearance package. Otherwise, it's a standard four-cylinder engine, turbocharged, 260 horsepower. I believe that's in the WRX that we were just talking about earlier. So it's a, you know, good-sized engine that, you know, they use and everything for performance, but larger SUVs. This is the third row, the three-row crossover. This is something that I think Subaru felt they had to have a few years ago. It was a tactical it was a tactical improvement. I think they saw people were, you know, owning Outbacks and Foresters and saying, well, okay, what else you got for me? And this is kind of the successor to the Subaru Tribeca, which was kind of a weird vehicle around, you know, the early 2010s before they finally got rid of that. It was a little bit of an uneven performance. It seemed like they were overthinking things. A random story, I was at the Ascents reveal in New York a few years back, and it was one of our top clickers on the site that day. Just people could not get enough of this crossover, which I think speaks to the fact that there was some pent-up demand for Subaru. It looks exactly like a three-row Forester. It's just this, like, looking out there, it looks like you left the Forester in the washing machine too long and it kind of, like, got stretched out or something. Whenever I look at it, I see Forester, like, oh no, wait, it's the Ascent. But I mean, it's a good sized vehicle. I've put, you know, my kid's car seat back there. There's captain's chairs in the second row in this one. A lot of room in the cargo area. I mean, it's a big usable three row SUV. Some specs here, you get all wheel drive, Subaru's all wheel drive, 26 miles per gallon on the highway. So, okay, not great. 20 in the city. You know, so there's all of that stuff. The inside, you get, this is kind of funny, carbon fibered accent trim. You know, I don't know. It looks okay. It looks cool. It's kind of like it's a light, or it's kind of like a deep blue on the outside with a very dark gray set of wheels, which is part of the Onyx trim. So Onyx is, you know, is sort of like, I think it's a mineral, right? And that's where they're throwing this out there. Super side note, I was at the Paris Motor Show once and I saw a Peugeot Onyx concept. And I remember asking the PR guy, I was like, what is an Onyx? And he's like, we don't know. We figured we'd use this for the name or something. It was a very, stylistic French concept, like, which I thought was quite cool, actually. So I'm looking forward to getting some more time in the Ascent. It's, you know, like I said, it's a large utilitarian vehicle. I think I'm going to put some stuff in there. You know, it's always stuff like this is always good to load up. Like my kid's scooter has got the dog in there, really, you know, really break it in, if you will. But that's about it. I do think it's a good value. You know, we've been talking a lot about value on this podcast, and you know, it's pretty well equipped. The, you know, it's a little, I would say, pedestrian as far as styling. Like even with the Onyx trim, didn't really stand out in like preschool drop-off line, but that's okay. So, I mean, yeah, that's the Ascent. I think, you know, we've driven it before. This is a decent value, nice looking vehicle. And if you're a Subaru buyer, obviously this is something that's right on your list because you get that all the things you like as a Subaru buyer are sort of offered as part of this vehicle's like basic, you know, character. So I could see why like Subaru owners might say, well, I don't really want to go over to like a Volkswagen Atlas or a Hyundai Palisade or a Ford Explorer because they know what they like. And they're like Subaru is among the most loyal brands in the car business. So, you know, sometimes you just need stuff in different sizes. And, you know, it really comes down to, do you need that third row? Do you want that sort of kind of large SUV feel versus like an Outback, which you can get a ton of stuff in. So it's kind of the buyer's proposition, if you will.
Yeah, I haven't driven an Ascent in a few years. Last time I was in one, yeah. I was honestly not all that impressed. It was fine. Yeah. But nothing about it really stood out to me as like something that I would buy over a lot of other vehicles, and because like the three row SUV segment is really jam packed.
Enormous.
Yeah,
yeah.
With some really good options, and I mean, still kind of like my number one choices are either the Hyundai Palisade or Kia Telluride. Pick the one you like.
Yep.
Pick the one that you like the looks of more. And even stuff like Mazda CX-9 or Honda Pilot, or like Dodge Durango, Ford Explorer, like there are a lot of things that I would probably pick before the ascent. Because last time I drove it, I didn't think the engine was particularly refined. I didn't think it handled all that great. I mean, it was fine. Like, it would be a perfectly fine vehicle, but there are a lot of things I would probably pick over it. Even styling-wise,
I would agree with you. Yeah. Oh, you don't like the styling?
I'm not a big fan of the Ascent's look.
Yeah. So it's interesting with, like, because I said it looks like so much like a Forester, I'm not in love with this generation of Forester either. I think they got it a little too busy. So I would agree with you on the Ascent, like, in that same sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's fine, but I wouldn't call it especially attractive.
Yeah. I actually think the Onyx trim does some nice things for it a little bit. But again, it's a nice crossover. If you're a Subaru owner, you'll probably like this. That being said, this segment is just jammed. You know, the new Grand Cherokee or the Grand Cherokee L are really, really good. Yeah. The Palisade and Telluride, like you mentioned, are really good. To me, this is one of those where I think you're in the Subaru fold. You need more space. You look at this. I'm not sure they're going to like start conquering a lot of new buyers with this, because like a lot of other, you know, vehicles we've mentioned will say, well, it's good. It's as good as everything else in the segment, but it doesn't go one step ahead. And I think in today's marketplace, you got to have something where like you're eating somebody else's lunch. You're better in some way, whether it's style or something. You know, usually in this segment, it's more like utility or connectivity. So, you know, a little more ways for the Ascent to go up, I guess. I don't know. So should we spend some money?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, let's do it. So Rhett from Kansas City writes in, I wrote maybe a year ago when our wheelhouse comprised of a 01 Honda S2000 and 2013 Honda Fit. Well, that's cool. I kind of remember this one now. So a little bit of an update here. Earlier this year, they replaced the Fit with a 14 Forester, which that's the generation of Forester I like a little bit more than this current Subaru styling. There's a common oil leak issue. I didn't know about that, but it sounds like they're dealing with that. So he's looking, they're looking for something else, considering the Ford Maverick. Okay. Part of it is because Rhett would like to maybe start a little bit of a family feud here, show up his dad and his brother by doing all the things they can do with their GMC Sierra 15 and 2500s with a smaller Ford Maverick. Okay. He seems to think they could get 95% of the same tasks done. In real world stuff, that's probably true. You know, I mean, a lot of the capability, the real capability of larger, heavy-duty, full-size trucks, you really don't scratch the surface on unless you're using them for certain purposes. I don't know, construction, contracting, maybe that's what his family does. I don't know. But I will say this, I've driven the hybrid and the regular Maverick, and both very capable. They can do like anything you need to like on a weekend. All right, let's continue here. He needs to tow a small camper trailer. I would like to haul sheets of material, 4x8s. Likes the idea of the hybrid's fuel economy, but he wants the all-wheel drive. So that's kind of one of the nuances of how you can spec out a Maverick. He also makes a point that he might never really need it. So, you know, that's it. He has some like off-roading and some just like ranch tasks and things he wants to be doing. Hasn't really put the Forester through these things, but he sort of admits that the Fit could do most of his like off-road stuff. And, you know, it sounds like I like this line here. A random 90s camera seems Camry is at the end of the trail that he's kind of worrying about. So I will say this, Rhett, I'm right there with you. A lot of times I think about like when I'm looking for a vehicle to go up north in from our press fleet, it's like, oh, geez, what about this road? Or I'm going to this place. Then you get there and it's like, there's a Civic Si at the end of this road that you plan to get a Wrangler for. And it's just like, yeah, that guy just turned on, got muddy, probably, you know, maybe dinged up the bottom of his car, but he's there. It's all good. So we tend to overplan for stuff like this, I think. Will the base Maverick suffice, or should he step up to all-wheel drive? Is there something in the same segment that might work for him as well? He says he's not a fan of the Santa Cruz, which he does not think will fit a 4x8 sheet of plywood or other material. I don't know. I drove the Santa Cruz a couple times. I didn't put anything in the back. So that's it. Should he go with a base Maverick or step up to all-wheel drive? I know you have considered the Maverick for your personal fleet. I'll toss it over to you there, Joel.
So honestly, base Maverick is probably fine. if you haven't even really stressed out your Forester, I think you should probably be fine. Yeah, you can probably get a set of chunkier tires that'll probably get you just about wherever you need to go. And if you're looking to like tow a teardrop trailer, I was just looking up some kind of broad weight ratings for them. It looks like most of them are light enough that the base Maverick would be perfectly fine for towing it. If you did feel like you needed all-wheel drive and wanted fuel economy and wanted to be able to haul 4x8 sheets of plywood, I would maybe suggest looking at the Toyota Sienna, which is now available as a hybrid with all-wheel drive, and even has a slightly rugged variant of it that would actually probably be fantastic for hauling around sheets of plywood and other bulky items, and would meet all of your other criteria. It would definitely be more expensive than a Maverick, but it would also be significantly quieter, more comfortable, more refined. Granted, you might not want that. You might want the slightly truckier vibe of the Maverick, but it's something worth considering. But yeah, honestly, you're probably more than fine with just the regular Maverick. And I mean, even if you did want to get the turbo one, it still gets pretty decent fuel economy. It's not as good. It's certainly not as good as the hybrid, but it'll still be better than pretty much any other small trucks. I do like the Santa Cruz. It's a lot of fun, but yeah, it doesn't get nearly as good a fuel economy. Even the base one is only on par with like the turbo Maverick. So, and the turbo Santa Cruz is quite expensive. So it has some trade-offs there, but yeah, I'd say Maverick or Sienna hybrid. what about you, Greg?
Joel, you're always good for like kind of the curveballs here. I did not expect the Sienna minivan hybrid to come in here, but hey, that's true. You know, a lot of times we think, what do we need to haul our stuff? And it's like, well, actually a minivan, put the seats down, you got a lot of room back there. I would say, again, without obviously having driven these roads, I would say you're probably fine with the base Maverick. If you want the all-wheel drive, then you should do it. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's how I always say, you know, when people ask things and they're kind of on the fence, like, if that's what you want, you should do it. You really should. But I think it sounds like you'd probably be fine with the base Maverick. It's definitely, again, more of like a trucky application than the Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz, they will tell you, is more of a crossover replacement. So it's got a little bit of a different vibe. I like it. It's fun to drive. It looks pretty good, but I think you'd probably be happier again with the Maverick. Like Rhett, you even said you're not really into the Santa Cruz. So I think that kind of eliminates that. If you're looking to step up, Ranger gets expensive kind of quick, but it's a little bit more of it's a larger truck. So that's something you could look at if you are just looking for a truck vibe. But the Maverick and the Ranger are quite different. It's not like some other, like, you know, there's like some familial like similarities. Like, these are different vehicles. You know, the Ranger as it is on sale is basically like an overseas truck that they brought here, and it's something different. And there's a new one coming relatively soon too. They revealed it a couple weeks ago, so check that out if you're interested, but it won't be here for some time. But I think base Maverick, you're probably fine. But if you want to roll with all-wheel drive, by all means, more power to you. So that's all the time we have this week on the Autoblog podcast. If you enjoy the show, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Android, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Helps us get the word out. Send us your Spend My Monies. That's podcast@autoblog.com. Be safe out there, and we'll see you next week.